There is no battery for the wireless mic, so I will be here, uncharacteristic of what you've seen. Sam has, well, anyway, I'm here, so let's just keep going. There are all kinds of funny quirks about these things, you know. My name is Norm, most of you know that, and Candy and I also go to Spirit of Peace Lutheran Church in the mornings because that's an easier time of day for her. And a few weeks ago, they asked me to be part of their worship committee meeting, and I'm kind of going, hey, I'm retired. I don't do those committee meetings anymore. But, you know, I did. And then they're talking about the schedule and whatnot and talking about this Sunday. And I said, oh, well, I'm preaching on that text for our Mennonite congregation. Oh, good. Would you like to do that for us too? Because our pastor is going to be gone. Well, except that then he had to switch his schedule around. So I'm going to be doing this sermon next week at King of Glory Lutheran Church. And then I found out this morning I'm going to be doing it again the following week at Spirit of Peace Lutheran. You know, all these pieces kind of come together in odd sorts of ways, and this season is one of those things that keeps us also a little bit off balance. I mean, we've come through Advent, we've come through Christmas, and we focus on Luke's gospel, and we love the sentimental Christmas songs and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, and then we come to Epiphany, and we read Matthew's account, and we get clobbered by bringing the Magi and Herod whack right up against each other. And that leaves us a little uncomfortable. What's happening here? And we can't really avoid that because Matthew, it's not like he tells the story of the Magi and he tells the story of Herod. I mean, he introduces the Magi with when Herod was king. And then the Magi meet with Herod, and he's part of that story all the way along and bringing us on into this. And we kind of go, we'd like to have light. We'd like to have the Magi, you know, like at the children's pageants, showing up at the manger with the shepherds. I mean, that's kind of fun. But this business of them coming and then triggering Herod into murdering all those children and, you know, it's, yeah, Gandhi's cringing here. You know, we all cringe at those things. But there's a sense in which we all see life, our own lives, and we see the world around us that way. And that's not a particularly new thing. Now, I'm dating myself, you know, and Ray isn't here tonight to share that ancient history with you. But I very well remember Simon and Garfunkel doing 7 o'clock news Silent Night. And maybe you've heard of that, but it didn't make, you know, the top 10 list anyplace. And they sang Silent Night and then played over the top of it the real news events from August 3rd of 1966. And it's very effective. It's very powerful. And you go, boy, this is jarring. This tears you apart. I guess I kind of have to say, didn't take a lot of creativity. That was the middle of the Vietnam War, and you put those things together, and you say, of course, that's the way we think about things. But that's not just then. That's really been true for a long, long time. I think that's why Matthew puts these two things together, so that we can see, as it were, like this Matthew was saying to the children, we can see the light coming through the cracks in the wall. There's a lot around us that isn't light, and a lot within us that isn't light, and yet the light shines in. 150 years ago, and you may know the song, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day, that was from Longfellow's poem. Usually we don't sing the Civil War verses of that song. But it was done actually on Christmas Day. He wrote it on Christmas Day of 1863 in the middle of the Civil War. And there's no question, he was a Union sympathizer. And he saw the Confederacy as the evil threat to peace on earth. And so you can catch that. You probably didn't hear this one sung in the mall, though. Then from each black accursed mouth the cannon thundered in the south, and with the sound the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Now, most of you know that we also, just before coming here a couple years ago, we lived for 17 years in Texas. And I will tell you that people in Texas, plenty of them, will still tell you that the real threat to peace on earth was Abraham Lincoln and the Union Army. And the people whose ancestors lived through that war do not call it the Civil War. They call it the War Between the States, and some of them call it the War of Northern Aggression. We don't hear that kind of talk in the North very often. But I do think we can all have that sense of this discontinuity in our personal lives, this discontinuity that's out there in the world. All through Advent, you know, it's hope and peace and joy and love, and the news goes on and we kind of go, where are all those things? And Longfellow expresses that very same longing. He said, "And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men." But I think Matthew, in his gospel, by putting Herod and the Magi together, really mushing them into one story, is giving us the answer. The answer that Simon and Garfunkel didn't have, the answer that Longfellow didn't have. To see the light through the cracks in the wall there. The Magi are mysterious characters. We don't know exactly where they're from. We have all kinds of questions. Are they historic? Are they legendary? Are they both? They saw the star at its rising. The translation that Matthew read gets that right. The star means just before the sunrise is when they saw the star. So that was in the east. So how did they know to go west to find Jesus? And how did they know that little child was the right one? And what did they understand a king of the Jews was? And doesn't really say that they went and talked to the people in the temple or that they went and talked to Herod. Rather, Herod inquires of the people of the temple and then calls for them and does that kind of secretly. And, you know, Joseph isn't mentioned as being in the house when they got there, yet Joseph is the one who gets the visit from the angel to rescue them and take them to Egypt. And, you know, why all these kind of weird, convoluted things? We have all these questions, and Matthew just ignores them. He doesn't give us any of the answers that we'd like to have with all of our curiosity. And I think that's to keep us reading the story. He starts with Herod's name. You got to keep reading. Well, what is Herod going to do? And then you're horrified at that. I think that Herod probably thought that when he killed all those babies in Bethlehem, he had gotten the right one, because he never heard about that baby again. Jesus disappears into obscurity until he shows up later. And here's another kind of curious thing that we get easily confused about. The name Herod applies to several different people in the New Testament. The one here is Herod the Great, and his son Archelaus is, you know, takes his place, so that's why they go to Galilee. But then there's Herod Antipas, who is the one who deals with Jesus and John the Baptist, and then there's Herod Agrippa the First, who deals with Peter and James, and then Herod Agrippa the Second, who deals with the Apostle Paul. And we can get all muddled around in that, but Herod is the family name. It's a name of a dynasty. And so there's a bunch of different people there, none of whom come across as exactly upstanding moral characters. But This baby escapes and is lost in Egypt, seemingly, but then comes back. Comes back in a different shape, a different time, a different place. And Noah was not killed by Herod the Great, but is killed in a violent death that in some way that we can't really wrap our minds around fulfills God's purpose, redemptive purpose. And then in his resurrection and calling together people who now for 2,000 years have found new life and peace and hope and joy and love through Jesus, come in. Now, what happens? Did we who follow Jesus dethrone all of those violent Herods and others who are like them? No. But I believe that what happens there, as we are transformed by that light of Jesus, as we see that, we who follow him make all the threats and all the power of all those visible, prominent people useless. They can't do anything to us. It was one of the things that frustrated the early Roman emperors. They couldn't threaten, they couldn't torture, they couldn't kill, they couldn't imprison the Christians to make them shut up. The Christians had a power that none of that other force could ever silence, could ever still. So here we are, 2,000 years later. We still see the turmoil in the world. We love the stories about Jesus coming. We love the worship of the Magi. And yet we also are glad for that part that tells us that there's a power over the Herods of this world. It's like the light shining through a crack in the wall. And one of the things that I think that tells us is that God isn't working through the people who are prominent, people sitting on their thrones, people with big armies. God is working with the seemingly insignificant, the obscure. Not great Jewish theologians, but mystics from somewhere in the East. Pastor Tim at the Lutheran Church this morning said they were Zoroastrian scientists who turned their science into religion. Maybe, I don't know. But they weren't the people you expected to be talking about God's salvation. And so God works through that. God works through this obscure little baby hidden off in Egypt who comes back to live in a little town of Nazareth that is even more obscure. Some people don't think that Nazareth even existed yet as a town at that point. I'm not going to get into all that kind of stuff, except that it wasn't very significant. I would frequently say to a group like this, the words of Jesus, "Fear not, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." There's not a lot of us here. We're not in prominence. We don't wield a lot of power. But this is the kind of group that God has chosen to bring that peace into the world, to show that light. And so, sure, there's planks in the wall, there's cracks between them. And as we look at the light that shines there, through that crack, if you will, between the Magi and Herod in Matthew's story, we can see that it shines into us. There are dark corners of our own lives, and just like the children under the sleeping bag, little light comes in, and you see it happening over here. So look inside. Where are the places where there are light shining on you? As we had lunch with the folks at the Lutheran Church this morning, one of Candy's friends was telling her how she asked a friend of hers to pray for the woman who gives her her health care, who was not doing very well. And this person got mobilized by Pat to provide a whole Christmas and birthday and all kinds of stuff for them. And you know who I think got the greatest thrill out of that was Pat telling Candy about it. Obscure, out of the way. Only a couple people will even ever know about that. But there was light shining through the crack to inside. But just like the little flashlight under the grocery bag, the light shines out also. And if you've ever been in a place like a barn that's, you know, dark inside and doors shut and you see the light, what do you want to do? You want to go up to the crack and look out the crack and see the light that's out there. And it's out there. And if you watch and you can see, there are people who are those agents of God's peace and of God's righteousness and God's reconciliation that are out there all around us. Spiritual director I had several years ago prompted me to take a regular old calendar, just a wall calendar, and every day write in just as much space as, you know, that little block for that day when I was most aware of God that day. What's one little thing you can say every day? Ah, I saw. It might have been a hidden, obscure thing, but I saw God working the power of peace. I saw the light of Jesus shining over there, and maybe even the people who were doing it didn't know that they were shining the light of Jesus. I'm not sure that the Magi had a clue, really, what they were up to. But it happens if we pay attention. And if we pay attention, if we see that light shining into the dark spots in us and shining out of us, beyond us, taking us beyond ourselves, we will have the courage to face whatever the struggles are around us. It gave Joseph and the Magi the ability to defy Herod and not be intimidated by him. If that can happen for them, it can happen for us.